Now, Tony Gosling presents the excellent weekly politics show at BCFM. Top man is Tony. He's an expert in all things Bilderberg. And he's been presenting radio programs and writing articles for a long, long time, challenging establishment thinking, challenging the narrative that we are presented with by the mainstream media. Former BBC journalist as well. I will, of course, tweet out links to where you can hear and watch his weekly politics programme on BCFM. Go to politicsthisweek.wordpress.com. I'll tweet that out now. Let's welcome back to the programme our friend Tony Gosling. Welcome back, Tony.
Hi, Richie. Thanks very much for inviting me on again.
Always good to have you on. And we're going to talk Bilderberg, of course, and Chantilly and everything that was going on there within this coming half an hour. I'm looking forward to that. But I want to get your thoughts on news today that two men were named, Kurram Butt, Rashid Redouane, were two of the three attackers allegedly in London on Saturday night. What have you made of what's happened, Tony, how it's being reported and the effect it might have on Thursday's election? What do you think?
Well, of course, the actual reporting of this attack has been, I would suggest, diabolical. The fact that there's been so little pressure from the press to name people, even though, of course, they're at the scene of the police raids in Barking and elsewhere, and they know the names, but they've been obediently doing what the police want in not naming them. And it's become pretty clear today why the police haven't named them. The police's story is that we're following lots of people, 20,000 people. We think there may be a wider network here. We've got to be very careful about giving out names because it might alert people that knew them, that they were involved in this. Well, I've got news for them. If there were other people involved in this, they already know. And it seems to me that you've got Inspector Plod at Scotland Yard, absolutely clueless. And what they're saying, the police, doesn't make any sense. The real reason, of course, for the not naming people, because the main thing that the police can gain by naming people is that they instantly will get a lot of help from members of the public and people from mosques, etc., that knew these guys, possibly even from other people within the law enforcement across the country that knew them, to help them track the trail of what's been going on. So absolutely crazy not to name them. And we know now why, I think. And that's because now they have been named. It's been possible to prove that local people had reported this guy, Kurram Butt, to the anti-terrorist hotline and also had... there were police investigations going on to him as recently as last year. So, you know, and also it's funny to look at the similarities actually with the Manchester attack and the London attack at the weekend. Both had been reported to the anti-terrorist hotline multiple times and to the police and mostly by the Islamic community themselves, and also by have been banned from mosques. It's quite clear to me what needs to happen here is that the police need to work much, much closely with the Islamic community rather than to mistrust them. And by the way, I had an interviewee on my programme in Bristol recently, Richie, who was saying that rather than using him to help gather information on radical Islamics, the MI5 actually tried to bully one of my fellow presenters on the radio, on the community radio in Bristol. It got a guy who does the show after me. It's called Arabian Nights, Mohammed Makawi. And you can look up this interview because he explains how MI5 tried to bully him. They said, well, if you work for us, we will help you get a flat, you know, because at the time he was having trouble with homelessness. We will help you because he couldn't get his wife to come to Britain. He said, oh, well, if you start working as an agent for us, then we will help you get your wife to come to Britain. This attitude by MI5, rather than working with trusted members of the community to try and intimidate and bully Muslims to become MI5 undercover agents is simply not working. And so there needs to be a much better liaison with the mosques, with the Islamic community, to root out people like Kurram Butt before this disastrous thing happened.
Now, just on that, Tony. Just on that, this is a great point you're making. The police will say, and they are saying today, well, they're not saying it themselves, they're saying it through Labour politicians and the Mayor of London. They are saying, community policing was devastated by Theresa May when she served as Home Secretary in the last government. 20,000 police less than there should be. They can't get police into communities to do that old job, walking the beat, picking stuff up on the ground.
That's right.
Is that
that's
right? Do you right. go along with
a,
that?
That's a national figure, 20,000 less.
Yeah.
In London, just in the last 12 years, they've lost 16,000 police officers. 16,000 just in London. So, of course, there just isn't the network of police out there to gather information from the public, you know, to be the old sort of bobbies on the beat that they used to be. It's been absolutely destroyed. So there are several characters in this situation with the London attacks at the London Bridge. You've got the Metropolitan Police Commissioner Cressida Dick. Now Cressida Dick was the Gold Commander who presided over the assassination, effectively execution, of Jean-Charles de Menezes. Now, if I was a police officer or a member of the public, I would have second thoughts about whether to trust her or not. I think it's an absolutely diabolical decision to put her in charge, someone who's been actually responsible effectively for a extrajudicial murder of Jean-Charles de Menezes in the aftermath of the 7/7 London bombings. He had nothing to do with it. And she should have been, you know, reprimanded. And certainly not promoted to become Metropolitan Police Commissioner. Then you've got MI5's Andrew Parker. And, you know, this is what disgusts me most, is we hear almost nothing about MI5 in the BBC, Sky and mainstream coverage of the London Bridge attacks. It's MI5's job, and they've got 1,000 full-time intelligence officers, to stop attacks like this. And they've simply failed again and again and again. We've seen failures at least 3 times this year, failed to stop people launching attacks in Britain.
Now, Tony, can I jump in there? So yeah. With MI5, some of our listeners, and when I say our listeners, I mean our listeners, your listeners, and my listeners, because we share listeners, they listen to our programmes. They will say, are MI5 missing stuff, or are they turning their backs on stuff that might be going to happen?
One thing's for sure. Parker should be sacked right now. In fact, he should have been sacked on Sunday. And everybody, every one of the chiefs of the various departments down the line, right the way down to people who are directly responsible for London for MI5, should have been sacked. There's quite clearly no retribution, no justice for people that make mistakes at MI5. In fact, Parker was the guy who was under previous Director General of MI5, was responsible for MI5's handling of the 7/7 narrative, that is to say, the story that MI5 spun originally, that they had no relations whatsoever, didn't know anything about any of the 7/7 bombers, and then it subsequently emerged in court that they had been following them for many years, all of them, in fact. Basically the lies that were told by Parker around the time of 7/7, he was then promoted because it was perceived that he'd got away with them, to now become Director General. So we've had nothing whatsoever from MI5. Now, one of the interviewees on my programme last Friday was Charles Shoebridge, the former army officer and former he was a special branch officer too. And I said to him, well, it's very strange because MI5 don't seem to see much about them. And he said, well, no, they don't have a press office. But he said, on the other hand, they don't need a press office, because pretty much every Home Affairs correspondent from all of the London media, that is the newspapers, television and radio, are all their press officers. So he's saying that these journalists, so-called journalists, are so close to MI5 that they just simply trot out the MI5 line. And we've seen that exactly happening with the failure to release the names of these people. So really, to save the embarrassment of the security services, since the local community round barking, I don't know what else people are supposed to do. I mean, we've heard the call again that the Islamic community must root out terrorists within their midst. Well, that's exactly what they've been doing, both in Manchester and in Barking and the London Bridge attacks. These people have been rooted out by the Islamic community, and they've been reported to the anti-terrorist hotline, straight to MI5. And what's happened? Nothing.
Nothing has happened.
Just been allowed to carry on and do their attacks. So MI5 needs to be taken apart right from the top down.
And it's dirty. You know, we know all about Salman Abedi, his father, connections with MI6, anti-Gaddafi. It's absolutely filthy. I want to ask you, we've been talking a lot in the last few weeks, since the publication of the Tory manifesto, we've been talking about you know, the possibility that somewhere along the line somebody is trying to throw this election. You know, the Tory manifesto was crazy,
well,
right?
I mean, look, okay, so you've got a situation now where we've got literally days to go before the general election. We've had in 3 months, we've had three terror attacks in Britain, and in 2 weeks we've had two terror attacks. So there's quite clearly a correlation between the two. I don't want to go, you know, be too conspiratorial about that, because it could just simply be that people in Britain are actually frustrated, annoyed, and angered by the deaths of civilians that are taking place across the world at the behest of people like MI6 and the British Armed Forces. And, of course, for example, in the Yemen war, we've got something like 80 personnel, British paid with British taxpayers' money, over in Saudi Arabia, helping the Saudis to kill, maim, bomb innocent people, civilians. Mostly it's something like three-quarters of the people who've died in Yemen are civilians. And this is quite, you know, this needs to change. And it might be there are people out there that just don't see any change through the democratic system, and they think, well, you know, this is the only way to get some kind of publicity around this. And they see it, you know, I wouldn't agree with it, but they see it as the only way to get any kind of justice for these hundreds and thousands. If you look at Iraq, it's millions of people displaced,
millions,
injured, killed, you know, to get some redress here in Britain. It's almost like, you know, we're watching these wars on TV. Although real people are dying, we still see it as some kind of drama, and we're not connecting that, and we're not managing to get our governments to rein back the interventionist foreign policy, which has been so utterly pernicious and divisive and has got people around the world mistrusting and hating Britain. And that includes us ordinary Britons, who for most people, this is not being done in our name at all. So I think that there's definitely an attempt to steer the election campaign towards this kind of terror, security, dominating it, you know. So,
but
that's
not
also
suiting,
which may well suit other people, not just people.
The point I was going to make, Tony, I don't want to get too conspiratorial either, but what, and if you let me just explain what I was going to say there, and then you can come right back in on it. I've been around politics since 1997, 1998. Like you, I've worked in commercial, national media. I've been around parties for years. I have a very, you know, I have a pretty good understanding of how parties work, the hierarchy, manifestos, and the publication of them. I can't understand the Tory manifesto. I can't understand a manifesto that's not being costed. Let me just say what I'm going to say, then come back in.
Yeah, of course. I think I agree with you. Yeah, it's bizarre.
It's bizarre, right? The going after a demographic that is your basic base. We're talking about senior citizens with money. Then you have these terrorist events, which ordinarily, Tony, would suit the Conservative Party government of the day, would suit the incumbent. But they are not suiting the incumbent. We've seen the polls come from somewhere like 16 points down to 3-2. I reckon by tomorrow they're going to be neck and neck and neck. Somewhere along the line, we've got to, without getting conspiratorial, we've got to acknowledge that the European Union and the forces behind it are powerful forces, Tony. And I suspect, without any proof whatsoever, you know, that agenda wants the Conservative Party out of power to maybe allow a coalition in, a European Union sympathetic coalition, to maybe look at the whole idea of a second referendum, as we saw in Denmark, as we saw in Ireland. What do you think of that?
Definitely quite possible. I mean, I look at the announcement of the Conservative manifesto by Theresa May a couple of weeks ago as the longest suicide note in history. It was incredible to see the Tories quite clearly stabbing themselves in the back, shooting themselves in the foot, whatever analogy you want to use. And they're attacking their natural people who would normally be voting for them. Now, look, you know, any spin doctor, any PR person, any Alistair Campbell, any Seamus Milne close to a prime minister would tell them, look, if you're going to be planning to do something which is going to upset your voters, don't talk about it before the election. So by all means, do that stuff, you know, sell off people's houses, impose the dementia tax, cut winter fuel allowance, but do it next year. Or later this year, once you've won the election. You don't do it before the general election. This is just political suicide. The other thing is, the basic premise for the general election is a farce. Theresa May's got a majority. She's got a fairly loyal party, a Conservative Party, who will do what they're told. much, much more disciplined than any of the other parties, including the SNP or Labour or Plaid, any of them. The most disciplined party by far is the Conservatives. The MPs generally do what they're told to, especially now they've got their Brexit, which they've been trying to persuade the leadership to do for years. So I think that there's definitely a globalist influence on calling the general election in the first place when it didn't need to happen. And then it seems causing the Conservative Party through Theresa May to commit harakiri when she's announcing her manifesto. So I totally aligned with you on that. And it brings us quite nicely on to talking about the Bilderbergs, the powerful influence behind the scenes that were actually involved in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, in the whole succession of changes that led to the creation of the European Union.
Now, just before
the coal and steel community, you know, and went all the way to a political union.
Just before you get on to that, and we've got a good 15 minutes to talk about Bilderberg, which is great. Before we do, give us a prediction then on Thursday, because my predictions are absolutely diabolical, even though my heart is in the right place, because I have some understanding of what's going on, but I get it wrong. I'm predicting no immediate result. I'm predicting negotiations, and I'm predicting a coalition involving Labour and somebody else afterwards. What do you think?
Yeah, probably be a hung parliament, I think. It's most likely, and there'll be some sort of an alliance between the Scottish Nationalists and Labour, and I think, and that's of course will have, it will mean that they will dilute down what the what the Labour Party want to do. We'll see. I mean, it could quite possibly be that Corbyn does become Prime Minister by this time next week. He could be Prime Minister because the Conservative polls have fallen and fallen rapidly. You shouldn't rely on polls, of course, as we've learned through the Brexit, and we've also learned through the arrival of Donald Trump on the scene. But you know, it's. I would agree. I think it's probably going to be a hung parliament, and it may well be Corbyn rather than Theresa May that comes out of that situation after a few days of negotiations, potentially, as the Prime Minister goes and is taking Britain into the future. But of course, the SNP will dilute massively the Labour commitment to Brexit, so they will be a spanner in the works. And it does seem to me this does suit the powers that be, the Bilderbergs behind the scenes, people like them that want to see a United States of Europe, are very, very annoyed about the democratic decision of Brexit, and the most importantly, Richie, the sign it sends to other countries in Europe which have got very strong secessionist movements, like the UKIP was in Britain, like the French, like the Germans, like the Italians, like the Spanish. You know, this could be a hell house of cards where we see the EU go down the drain in a very, very short space of time, and they're very much aware of that. So they're trying to ameliorate all the effects of Brexit that Theresa May and the Conservative Party were going to, they were going to have their hard Brexit and potentially a bit of a row with Brussels. So it's quite clear that that's a definite possibility, that there's been powers behind the scenes that have been pushing us in that general direction.
Brilliant. Just before Tony talks about Bilderberg, let me just do a quick bit of housekeeping. politicsthisweek.wordpress.com. Go to Tony's website, bookmark it. Check out the BCFM Politics Show. Tony Gosling is our guest. Coming up in the second hour, Nicholas Wilson, Mr. Ethical, who's a regular guest on the programme. Nicholas was at a hustings with Amber Rudd, the Home Secretary. He started talking about Saudi Arabia and arms dealing, and Rudd spoke to the moderator and he was shut up pretty quickly. That's Hastings and Ryan. Mr. Ethical joins us in the second hour. The Bilderberg meeting ended yesterday. It was in Chantilly in Virginia. Tony's been writing about and reporting on Bilderberg for many, many years. He's an expert. Tony, what happened, mate? What went on over the last few days?
Well, very difficult to know. I mean, I have to start off by saying it's difficult to know because they're very, very tight on their security. Charlie Skelton, as ever, has done a fantastic job in pulling apart some of the most interesting facts to do with the guest list. Luke Radowski was also brilliantly collaring all of the Bilderbergers on the way in and on the way out of the conference at the airport, doing a superb job on that, and also managing to get the official US Police Department to protect him and his rights rather than the Bilderbergers and their rights, whilst they were trying to pull strings behind the scenes to get the police to say that they were causing a disturbance and get them removed. He managed to carry on doing it. But look, some of the most important things to learn from the, of course, we don't know what exactly was discussed inside, but you can tell quite a lot by who's gone. Is this thing called the Munich Security Conference. The annual Munich Security Conference takes place down in, you can only call it Bavarian Illuminati country down there, really. It's also some of the senior people in that conference organizing it, including some of the people on the board that organized that conference were there at Bilderberg. This is really the kind of military arm of NATO, where they come out into the reasonably near the public and get all their military people together right across the NATO countries and make big policy statements and attempt to get everybody on board their so-called consensus to have a war with Russia. They seem to want constantly to be threatening Russia to use the, you know, our taxpayers' money to threaten Russia. Of course, Assad and Syria. So that's one big contingent down at Bilderberg, again knitting Bilderberg into NATO, because NATO, someone did a fantastic piece of journalism a couple of years ago which proved that since the 1960s every single director general of NATO, secretary general, sorry, of NATO has been to the Bilderberg conference just before they became secretary general. So Bilderberg is NATO, really. It's the kind of political lobby arm of NATO, and the idea that that NATO hasn't actually got any kind of really strong democratic force going on within it. You know, the yeah. people that make the decisions at NATO have got nobody that they're not accountable to anybody. Nobody can come in there and say, well, what are you up to? What are you doing? What are you doing with spending our money? Apart from Donald Trump making a bit of a fuss about people not giving enough money to NATO. So it's a sort of massive autonomous army, really, that just does what it wants at our expense. But they're out there stealing for the tribe, but that's the way I think they see it. You know, basically grabbing territory, whether it's Russia, Middle East, Africa, in order that we can then exploit their resources. And there isn't any real accountability. So it's interesting to see all these guys there. Also, a large contingent at the top of the German government were there. Five different senior, as it was last year in Dresden. So this has got a very, very strong connection to the German government. Quite clearly, Bilderberg is, and it was, of course, chaired for the first 20 years by this former SS officer. So Germany is still very closely connected to the Bilderbergs. And also a lot of top US advisors around Trump. Now, they're people who are very close to Trump, but are not necessarily his friends. In other words, you know, they've managed to wheedle their way into the National Security Council, the cabinet, etc., and his closest advisors, but they're not really fans of his foreign policy. So they'll be out at Bilderberg kind of ratting on Trump, and I would imagine that there would be quite a critical discussion about Trump at Bilderberg this year with them and the others, and possibly plans launched afterwards to impeach Trump. So that would be interesting.
Very
to see
good,
that,
Tony. Very good. Place. Very good. And they have already made replacement in the vice presidency, don't they? In Mike Pence, who's more neocon than William Kristol and Paul Wolfowitz put together. Tony Gosling is on the line. Tony, listeners are bombarding us with questions and points. You touched on one there, NATO. Listeners asking, would the Arab NATO have been on the agenda? And the other thing that people think might have been on the agenda is the dealing with the independent alternative media online.
Well, yes, okay. That one of the agenda items was called the War on Information.
Yeah.
The War on Information has been waged by Bilderberg really for the last 30 or 40 years. And they have been using a lot of their financial resources to buy up, I'm talking about the kind of Murdoch factions, to buy up any kind of media that is in the mainstream that speaks out against their ideologies, their ideas, their so-called consensus. One thing I really learned at Bilderberg last year, Richie, was talking to some of them. I mean, it would be very difficult to this year, but when you actually get to have a chat to them, you'll find that if you mention certain subjects, critical, you know, in other words, things that the globalists aren't into, like secession movements, Brexit was my little thing I mentioned. It's almost like there's the body language, they recoil.
It's like they're not used to, they don't want to be around anybody that talks about Brexit. So they've got this groupthink. I mean, George Orwell had it 100% right, didn't he? He said the war in 1984, he said the war is not meant to be won. It's meant to be continuous. And that's exactly what we've got with the war on terror.
Never ending.
It's meant to be continuous, you know, and that's exactly the kind of thing you're not allowed to criticize what they're up to, you know, then. That's the way the Bilderbergers operate. There is no light gets shed and no air is breathed on the opposite points of view. So it's just a one type of view that they get there. The other thing to say about this continuous war is it's pretty clear to me that at some point someone is going to come along, a world leader, whatever, president of the European Union, God knows, American president or something, and say, I'm going to save you from this war. So it's the new Hitler. We're going to get the new Hitler at some point in the future, which they'll roll the red carpet out for, will be the person who saves us from this terrible continuous war. And this is the sort of thing that Orwell was predicting many years ago. So yeah, also CERN were at Bilderberg, and this woman Sharon White from Ofcom, who banned Press TV there a couple of times. They've nearly banned Russia Today from the airwaves. So what the hell are the people like Henry Kissinger, a serial war criminal, and the bankers around him, of Goldman, there's something like four people from the top of Goldman Sachs doing, lecturing Sharon White on how to regulate the British broadcasting. Now, it seems to me that she's there because the English language is very powerful around the world, you know, with Russia Today, with Al Jazeera, which is another big story to do with that today. And Sharon White is this person no one's ever heard of, who is the one that can ban the channels in English, in England and in Britain, that the Bilderbergers and people like them don't want.
You're absolutely right. She worked in the British Embassy in DC. That's all I know about her, some years ago. That's the sort of anal nonsense that I remember. Tony Gosling is on the line to us live from Bristol, BCFM, the terrific politics show, the weekly politics show. I've put the links out online there. I want to ask you this, Tony, in the few minutes that we have left. You, of course, worked with distinction, to be fair to you, for the BBC. I never did, but I have friends there, and I have one or two people there who I know quite well, who work in compliance. Seeing as you mentioned Ofcom, I was given a tip-off a few weeks ago. Now, the way this programme operates, I run an independent, self-contained, fully operational studio in Manchester, and I broadcast live every evening at 7, and I do a Sunday morning programme, blah, 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 no big deal. That's what I do. Now, I've always operated in the knowledge that I wouldn't be molested by Ofcom because I don't manage an online radio station. There is no linear schedule. I'm not the editor, the managing director, whatever. That's the way the law is. That's the way Ofcom operates at the moment. But a friend of mine who works in compliance said they have it on very good authority, Tony, that in 2018, independent operators like myself will be told you can no longer operate anymore. Now listen, before anybody thinks, I said this yesterday, this is not about me. I have no... I'm not beset by narcissism or by ego. It's not about me. There are thousands of independent operators making programs around the country, and it's a great thing. Such diverse opinion and news and what have you. But we're told, Tony, that sometime next year they're going to come along and say, right, listen, you can't continue to do that. You're going to have to get an Ofcom licence. Now, I dealt with them at TPV in London. I dealt with Ofcom. I wasn't the Ofcom compliance officer, but we had to deal with them, and we had to, you know, speak with the other presenters and producers and educate them as to what the compliance rules were. Are you hearing anything like that, that next year independent operators will be told you can't do it anymore, got to get a licence?
Well, you know what, I'm hearing similar sounds from Theresa May. The reaction to this terrorist attack at London Bridge has been, well, we need to close down the internet. I mean, she hasn't actually said close it down. She's saying put massive restrictions on the internet. I don't know how restricting the internet stops people hiring a van. I don't know how it stops them buying a knife, because those are the only two things that needed to be done for these people to carry out their terrorist attack. And certainly anyone that's planning something doesn't use the internet. Everybody knows that. The other thing I'd say about Ofcom is, a few years ago I did some phoning around to find out a little bit about them. I didn't trust them. I put a couple of complaints in that just got brushed aside. And it turned out that the consumer panel, which is supposed to represent all of us, millions of viewers and listeners around Britain, They were shortlisted by Odgers Limited. Now, Odgers are a big City of London firm that pick the non-executive directors and recommend non-executive directors for banks and financial institutions. So to have the same sort of people who would be a non-executive director on a bank representing the consumers, us, is a farce. Ofcom is not actually up to speed. It's not doing its job. It's blocking. For example, I mean, I do quite a lot of work on Press TV, the Iranian channel in Tehran. The whole of the rest of the world, Richie, can watch that pretty much, apart from Britain.
It's madness, Tony.
It's the only place where it's banned. It was also banned, by the way, from one of the, I think it's called Hotbird satellite stations, which was managed by John Burt, who was the former BBC Director General when I was working there, who closed down so many of the best programmes in the early 1990s and really stopped the corporation doing what it had been so good at in, say, the 60s, 70s and through most of the 80s in entertainment, comedy. He brought the whole thing to a halt. And there's a fantastic new book out by, I think it's called Tom Mills. I'm not quite sure of the guy's name, but from Aston University. You might want to have a chat with him. He's a fantastic guy. Or it's called the BBC, The Myth of Public Service. And he really goes into the way that the biggest business community, if you can call them that, the City of London, moved in and took over the BBC in the late 80s and early 90s. And now it's just simply a propaganda arm for them. I mean, this is illustrated with the way that all of the BBC people, like Dominic Cacciani, there's also Gordon Carrera, all these home affairs and security correspondents just simply do what MI5 want. They don't question MI5. They don't even mention it unless they absolutely have to. They are effectively part of the security service. And when I was working for the BBC in London, I was working sometimes with cabinet ministers, and you'd see these MI5 people turn up with them, you know, with their dark glasses, their mobile phones, which were quite new in the early 1990s. And they weren't nice people, Richie, yeah? They were almost, it was almost like a gang of mafia had turned up with the minister. And, you know, he was on his best behaviour whilst we were recording. But then there was just bad vibes with these guys. I didn't feel safe, you know, didn't think that they were there to make us feel safe. I thought that they were almost like kind of private security guard thug characters. So there's no accountability there. That's the problem. And we need to shine as much more light as possible onto our internal security service. If you know, the problem being that if there is going to be any kind of Gestapo appear in Britain in the next few years, I hope to God there isn't, but that's where they'll be spawned from. That's where they'll start. And so we have to have some proper accountability, and heads need to roll, because they haven't been doing their job. They haven't been protecting us from terrorists.
Tony, I want to tell our listeners, bcfmradio.com. You can listen live to Tony on there every week. To find out more about the program, go to politicsthisweek.wordpress.com, politicsthisweek.wordpress.com. You know you don't have to wait to be invited on this program, mate. You can invite yourself on anytime you want. Thanks for that report on what's been going on at Bilderberg and for your thoughts on
London. The
other
thing is, do go to bilderberg.org as well. I started that website back in 1996. Anyone that wants to get into the real deep background of how it first started, who started it. The other thing we haven't mentioned, of course, is the Masonic links to Bilderberg with Freemasonry written all over it. There's several bits of very important evidence that link the creation of Bilderberg back in 1954 and the British, the Queen's cousin, Prince Michael of Kent, to the Bilderberg conference that took place in Turnberry, which was done by his personal assistant, organised by his personal assistant. So very, very close to the royal family, Bilderberg, and to Freemasonry.
We must do a show, Tony. We did one when I was based in Spain some years ago. We must do an entire programme about the history of Bilderberg, the origins of it, the EU and everything. Let's do that in the summer.
Happy to do that whenever you want, Richie. Yep.
Be brilliant, mate. Thanks again, Tony. Look after yourself. Great work.
Thank you.
The terrific Tony Gosling on the line to us there from Bristol, politicsthisweek.wordpress.com. That's the website. Bilderberg.org, as Tony reminded me there, which is a veritable treasure trove of information about Bilderberg. And you can hear him on Fridays. bcfmradio.com is the website there.